Thank you, Leo Brennelmost Hour. Culture Current Events Hour, Catholic Faith. We do that 50 minutes every afternoon. Unfortunately, another day of having to discuss distressing events. El Cajon, California, another police shooting there with a gentleman who seemed to be having some sort of something going wrong, and his sister decided to call 911. He pulled a vapor pipe out of his pocket, which apparently at first glance appeared to be a weapon, and was shot dead because of that. So we got that. Got that to deal with. And then equally as disturbing and no less challenging, the South Carolina story from yesterday, where a young man, teenager, apparently kills his father, goes to a neighboring school, shoots two students, and this is what we're dealing with. We continue to have our own national tragedy right here. No ICE is needed, right? No Syrian refugees that you fear are bad Skittles candy. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, Current Events, our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Distressing news day yesterday with a couple of stories that, I don't know, maybe got overshadowed by the Kate Middleton, Duchess Kate, being smitten by the Prime Minister of Canada visiting or whatever. That seemed to be a big story, right? We all had to pay attention to that. But unfortunately, kind of not paying attention, I think, to some of the other challenging things going on, like this event in South Carolina, rural South Carolina, where a young man, teenager, apparently kills his father, calls his grandmother in distress, then approaches a neighboring school and shoots two young students there. And, you know, we like to talk a lot about the threat of radical Islam, and we like to talk about how, you know, this is the biggest challenge that faces this country and the citizenry of this country, the fact that there's going to be somebody sneaking in across the border, coming in and doing something egregious. Don't think we have to wait for that. I've said this many times. There's always, unfortunately, the recipe for disaster, disturbed individual, and firearm. And when you've got those two together, what you end up having is a situation like you had yesterday in South Carolina. Now, we can talk about it, and we should talk about it, but the question is, how do we resolve this? On Facebook, I posted this over last night. I got a lot of response, a lot of play. Always great to hear from Mark Shea when he chimes in on things that I post. And I was in the dark, completely in the dark on this until he enlightened me on it. And apparently the NRA doesn't like it at all, which is odd. As he posted the Jon Stewart Comedy Central segment talking about this smart gun technology, where essentially you wear a wristwatch type of apparatus that allows you to have a code of connection to the firearm. Without that, it's got to be within very close range. Without that, it doesn't work. So someone can't take the gun, use it on you. Someone can't steal the gun. A family member, in this case, like what happened in South Carolina, it's not going to go anywhere and cause any harm because if you don't have the device. Now, granted, somebody could get the device, and now it's a different thing. It's not exactly the same, but there obviously are elements of technology, and I think emerging technology, that could potentially change the dynamic and undoubtedly possibly make guns safer, which would make our culture safer. But right now we don't have that widespread. We do have a widespread problem. And I think guns are the symptom. I think, granted, it's a pretty nasty symptom in the system that would say that somebody's disturbed, they get a gun, and they're going to do something egregious pretty quickly. And they have, as Mark says on my Facebook post, the results of that are permanent. They have that that unfortunate option of leaving the permanence behind. But again, guns to me, still, even with the fact that one could do such destruction, really just symptomatic to the systemic issue of mental health, emotional health, whatever you want to call it. I think by and large, when these things happen, it's not necessarily that somebody has, and maybe they do, maybe you can say, well, they had a history of mental health issues. Well, what really generally is that? 90%, 99.9%, I would venture to guess, those with mental health issues have emotional issues. They're not chemically imbalanced to the point that they can't hold it together. They're not schizophrenic. They're not borderline personality disorder. They don't have some degree of real dysfunction mentally. They're emotionally disturbed. Get in these situations, they can't control their emotions. Next thing you know, they have a way of making something permanent. But I don't know where this has come from, but it's always been. Look at the history of mass shootings. You can go back to 100 years. You see this. You see this dynamic taking place where someone decides they have to take others with them. Just decide that. So what they're going to do? Got to take others down. And that is the most devastating of all of this. Yeah, it's terrible for anyone to do anything to themselves. We don't want to see anyone commit suicide. But the worst possible of anything is the mass shooting suicide combination that happens far too frequently. Now, the situation yesterday, the young man didn't turn the gun on himself and was able to be apprehended, but he probably would have, quite frankly, if it wouldn't have been for the fact that it was an off-duty fireman, I think it was, maybe, I'm not sure, who was able to take him down and restrain him. But it's how do we fix that? How do we fix this issue? What can we do? Now, some on my Facebook post are saying, well, we got to put God in the equation. I would agree with that. Yes, we have to invite grace in. And believe me, without the grace of God, none of us can do anything. There's no doubt about that. But for someone who doesn't know they need God, the last thing they think they need is God. So presenting a solution, well, here's your solution. You just need some Jesus in your life. That's not necessarily going to work. It's just not. I've been on the other side of that fence. I know how it works when people are always trying to push you in this direction, and it's the last thing you think you need. Certainly the last thing you want. So there has to be something else that could potentially prevent something of this nature from happening. And I think, I've said it so many times, the classroom is the most prime proving ground for intervention ever. Or at least it should be. That's what it should be. We talk to Lori Desitels frequently, Revelations in Education, and the work that she's done with emotional intelligence. We need to use this proving ground. We need to utilize to the fullest capacity. Opportunities to look, profile the heck out of kids. Not racially, not ethnically, but behaviorally. Profile them. See what's going on. Look for intervention. Look for ways of providing real solutions, emotional solutions. Teach them the cognitive reasoning skills that, as Laurie talks about, teaches them at first to understand why. First off, realize what's happening in your body. This is why you're triggered this way. This is what's going on. Realize that. And then learn to deal with it, realizing it's a physiological response. And it's something that is natural. We all experience it, but you can control it, especially when you understand it. But what happens, emotions get just cranked and people die. And largely because there is access to firearms. And if that access to firearms was restricted, and some way, somehow, there was a way to say, let's stop this before it gets out of control, let's recognize the patterns, let's watch longitudinally, let's keep very accurate records on students when it comes to behaviors. And if we see things that could potentially appear problematic, either at the moment or sometime in the future, let's address that. There's ways to do it. There's, in my opinion, no better environment. Where can you truly see the behavior day in and day out of individuals? Where can you truly begin to explore those opportunities that would provide ways of intervening? And even if it's not like intervention, like we got a problem here, we got to address, subtle ways, just the educators being aware. Let's make sure that we address this individual so they know that they're being seen, so they know that they're being appreciated. These are powerful, powerful triggers for emotional well-being, especially if a child is coming from an environment where they don't get that affirmation ever at all. The educators can see it, see those deficiencies, and address those deficiencies. Well, maybe we're onto something now. And maybe this could do something. But I pray for the day when we don't see another day like yesterday, where you've got somebody, it makes it worse for me personally because kids were victimized in this. And that makes it ridiculously worse. But I don't care who the victim is. I really don't. I don't care who it is. To find a way to somehow change this would be a huge step in the right direction. Back in a moment, I'm going to talk about another shooting incident, El Cajon, California. More in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Redbox Media now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our Friend of the Show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. We were talking earlier about this tragedy in South Carolina. Tragedy in El Cajon, and unfortunately, one of the kind of secular headlines that seem to be happening so frequently. And Yeah, you know, you could say, well, white people get shot. Mentally disturbed white people get shot. And it never makes the news. And not that white people are expendable. No one is, right? It was all white people got shot in South Carolina. We're not talking about that. We're talking about a yet another systemic challenge that you had two police officers, one with a taser, one with a gun. And could the taser not do the job to prevent someone from firing on you if you think they've got a gun, which it wasn't, it was a vapor pipe. This guy, according to the story, was acting erratic. Something not right with the way he was behaving. His sister, who was with him, was concerned, placed a 911 call about his erratic behavior. The cops come and kill him because of what appeared to be a weapon. Now, here we go again. And there are plenty of individuals who cannot wrap their heads around the Black Lives Matter movement. They like to co-opt and tone deafly say crazy things like all lives matter. Which, as I say, if you're going to do that, great. Then stop saying God bless America. Just stop it. If you truly believe that black lives do not matter in a certain special way, stop it. Stop saying God bless America and say God bless the world. Let's just use that from now on. And don't say born and unborn at the end of the Pledge of Allegiance or have any kind of special preferential option for life in the womb, because all lives matter, right? The world matters. God bless the world. So when you look at this and you look at a movement such as Black Lives Matter, who are trying to bring an awareness to an issue of injustice, and you just want to combat that, just the message itself. Because what do you hear? The crazy, well, these guys just want to loot and burn things. I don't think in any of the principal missional focus of Black Lives Matter in any of their agenda you're going to see, and we loot and burn, just so you know. Here's some tactical approach for you. Loot and burn. Because, you know, that's how you get your point across. But as we were talking in the first segment, this breaking point, tipping point, whatever it is that occurs in some people, emotionally disturbed, finally they snap. Certainly what happened in South Carolina, undoubtedly a kid in a rage against his father decides to, in undoubtedly a fleet of a moment, has the opportunity to do something egregious, and because of that uncontrolled rage, does what he does. Then, in the aftermath, with the rage still raging, he does what he does to kids on a playground. So, you know, we could start a campaign, Kids Lives Matter. We know that. But we don't want to co-opt anything. What we want to do is join in those efforts. So what if maybe Black Lives Matter had some real solutions, and if we were willing to listen, then maybe we could stem even the challenges like what we saw in South Carolina. But when someone has systematically discovered injustice, experienced, well, I just discovered it. You don't have to look back and dig it out and go, okay, we see this pattern here. See how that works. How it used to work. No, it's a real unfortunate experience for certain individuals to experience injustice, to be painfully aware of the injustice. And then when this tipping point occurs, how do they deal with the injustice? It's a manifestation of this type of behavior that, no, it is not appropriate, nor is it condoned by the movement. It's just something that happens as a byproduct of this demand for justice. And then things of this nature happen. Not that it's approved or policy or anything of that nature. So should we see even greater reaction to this El Cajon situation, realize what's happening there. Realize what this community is experiencing, and now for it to be yet again another unarmed black man falling to the hands of police officers, there's going to be reaction. There's going to be some degree of protest, of course, and just expect it. But at the same time, don't combat it. Don't co-opt it. Don't belittle it. Right? Well, that's really what it is when you do those things, is belittling. You don't want someone to belittle your cause. Right? You don't want this, if you're a pro-lifer, someone to come along and say, oh yeah, well, what about the life of whomever? Well, yes, you get that. Which I would hope, if they asked me that, well, if you're so pro-life, what happens when they're out of the womb? Well, we're going to take care of them. We're going to find ways to do that. I will adopt them if I have to. Would that be a solution? I'll be happy to do that. Whatever it is. We don't like those co-optings. We don't like those belittlings. But when it happens, let's have something prepared. While at the same time, joining those in solidarity, in true solidarity, who undoubtedly experience injustice, and let's work together to find a way to bring about the justice. Can we do that? Can we really begin to try to find a way to do something differently? And again, a systemic issue that you have to ask, is it stronger training? Should officers have weapons that are more taser-like as opposed to bullet-like? Fortunately, I've never been tased, been arrested, been subdued, been handcuffed, all of that stuff. Never had a taser. But my guess is that it can be pretty incapacitating based on the footage I've seen of people being tased. And if you've got a close enough shot to tase someone, that should be all you need to subdue them, you would think. So it seems to me like, yeah, here's the deal. You got two cops on a situation, one with a gun, one with a taser, and only if the taser does not stop a perpetrator from advancing and potentially causing harm to others, then that's when you use lethal force. But couldn't that just be a simple policy platform? Hey, there's always going to be at least two. One of you will have a taser. One of you will have a gun. You got each other's back. You tase first, shoot second. But only if the taser proves not to incapacitate the potential shooter. Let's have this policy platform enacted across all law enforcement organizations. Could that work? Could that possibly be a solution? I don't know. Seems reasonable to me. Now we have an expectation. Now someone who is in a state of distress, whatever that may be, to the point of having police officers around them, they would perhaps even maybe not act as erratically as they would, thinking that they might get shot. As if they're thinking, okay, worst is going to happen. I'm going to get tased. And I'm going to be aggressive. So they don't have to worry about me. This will end well. This will be all right. Could it be something that simple? I don't know. See, I know nothing about the industry. But I'm just asking, because a lot of times the solutions really are simple. We just don't see them, or we can't necessarily formulate them. Sometimes it takes a little bit outside perspective for someone to go, okay, well, maybe that would work. Something's got to work, right? Something. Something's got to change. And if we want to show the black community that we have any degree of compassion, we need to work toward that change. We need to help them. We need to stand in the gap with them, for them, and be there and truly be their advocates, not their adversaries. So, yes, Black Lives Matter in a very special way, in a very unique and different way, because of the injustice that this community has experienced for a long, long time. More to come. We'll talk about Gary Johnson coming back. Leo Brown, Almost Hour.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back in Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. So apparently Chris Matthews over on, was he on MSNBC now? Is that where he is? Now, he could have always been there. I don't know. I know the name. I don't watch TV. I think I've said that many times. And if I watch something, it's because I'm trying to honor my wife who wants to watch something and wants to kind of share that time with me. So I'm like, okay, I'll try to put my work away. I'll try to focus on TV for a little while. I mean, there's really nothing I like least. And it's a dying to self when I do that. Now, as I have said, there are some programs that I do thoroughly enjoy, but if I never watched them again, I would not even think twice about it. But it is time almost again for the next season of The Walking Dead, which, yeah, I'm looking forward to. But if someone said you could have $5 a day for the rest of your life or watch TV, I mean, really, it's that low of a priority. Man, $5 a day? Yeah. Never to watch TV again? Yeah. I'll take you up on that. So it's not going to take much. So anyway, wherever Chris Matthews is, that's where I was going with this. He had a town hall with the Libertarians, Gary Johnson and his running mate, whose name escapes me. But that's okay because he's a Libertarian candidate for presidency, and we barely know Gary Johnson. But Johnson, of course, had the Aleppo fail when he was in an interview and was asked, well, what would you do about Aleppo? And he's like, what the heck is that? I didn't even know. No ringing bells at all. Now, you know, in all seriousness, I hope there's nothing wrong with Johnson because he seemed to have another big lapse of recall when it came to naming one foreign leader he respects, which I think is a legitimate question from any interview when you're running for political office. Who is your model? Who's out there that you've seen do what you think is a good job? What you would say, if I was in that position, you could kind of expect me to kind of at least have some qualities because I respect and admire this, right? So Johnson is asked by Chris Matthews, who's your favorite foreign leader, right? Not a trick question. Not trying to catch you on anything, just really simply asking the question. And he could not think of one. Could not think of one. And then it took him a long time to even think of an example after Matthews rattles off countries and regions and asks for anybody in these areas, what do you think? And then he finally says, I like the former president of Mexico. And you know, and then the next question I would have is why? At least his running mate said Elizabeth Merkel and or Angela Merkel, excuse me, and was able to recover a little bit because that earned the respect of Matthews. But, you know, I don't know that it's Johnson just not knowing or really just not caring. And I think it's really just not caring, which would lead to not knowing because you don't care. Why should you know? But this is, and I've mentioned this many, many, many times, but I think we got to realize that I know that Johnson will get support because he's not Trump or Clinton. I know that there are those who will migrate into a third party, and because it, the libertarians seem to kind of be the maybe only third party that anyone is remotely familiar with, and maybe there's that Green Party thing, but that's too far out there, so I'll just take this choice. You really need to know what choice you're making. If you're going to, you know, that's a protest vote if that's what you're doing. If you're going to vote on value, if you're going to vote on principle, if you're going to vote on this is what I believe, which is how we should vote, we should find a candidate that we can truly support because of that. If you're going to do that, explore what libertarianism is all about, because there is no foreign policy, none. The rest of the world may as well not exist. So for a libertarian to answer the way Johnson did, in my book, it's okay. It may make him look stupid, yes. But for a libertarian, yeah, so I'd say, if somebody asked me that, and I'm a libertarian, let's say, which I'm not, but let's say I was, and somebody asked me that, I'd say, Chris, you know what? Foreign leaders? I'm a libertarian, right? I don't even respect my American leaders because nobody has had enough of a willingness to stay out of the way of personal freedoms, right? Rousing applause. Yes, he's my guy, right? That's how you answer that question. You don't go, who's that one Mexican guy? Right, you don't do that. But again, I do believe it literally could be from the fact that if you're that geeked into libertarianism, you don't care. You don't care that anyone, you don't even care that anyone else exists, really, because the true expression of libertarianism is this live and let live mentality of anything goes as long as nobody gets hurt, right? I'm okay, you're okay. I mean, that's what it's about. And not putting in safety nets into government, not putting your nose into business outside of your country, you name it, there's just, it's weird. I mean, let's face it, it's weird. It's a weird sort of non-governmental political party. I don't see that there's any sustainability and any real hope for libertarianism to ever take root because it just is flimsy. It's very flimsy. So when Johnson's standing there with egg on his face once again, grasping for an answer that he doesn't care about, should show you something. So what I've said many, many times in this election, there are those who will do the third party. I'm convinced of it. You're dissatisfied. One debate was all you could stomach. You're not going to watch the others, and you know you're not going to vote for either of these individuals. So you need a choice. Because don't just sit it out. Is that really how you want to express your duty to your country? Do you want to express it that way? No. Go and do the research. I have discovered Soraya Foss. I believe that she exhibits the qualities that I would look for. She has my support. I've said that many times. The American Solidarity parties out there that really have some terrific platform issues when it comes to matching the principles of Catholicism. And quite honestly, if I were to have discovered them before I discovered FOSS, they would probably have my support. I got to be honest with you. But there's a huge number of independent candidates that are at least legitimate enough to be write-ins because they've gotten the ballot approval across all states, and they're out there, and you can look and you can decide. The other thing I cannot recommend enough in this election is don't straight party ticket your vote, right? Look at the other options that are there. Look at your congressional makeup and look at voting records. Really decide, is this person going to be who they say they are? Are they going to represent me? Am I their constituent? Because when you start asking questions like that, then maybe a straight ticket vote is not the way to go. Because there could be some, especially in races where there's junior potential for someone stepping into a role in Congress, there's hope in that. There's real hope in that. And I don't care where they happen to be politically at times, because someone young enough, especially if they're young enough and they're running in a contested seat for whatever it happens to be, Senate, Congress, you name it, you've got some potential to maybe be represented, especially if you feel like you're not now. So look closely at those options, definitely well before November 8th. Begin to study it. I started studying months and months ago because I knew this would come down to me not being satisfied with anyone, right? I saw that way early on. And not that I honestly, there was a time when I thought Cruz was going to be on the Republican side, which I would still have not as strong a concern, but definitely a strong concern that would have forced me into a third party search even then. But again, do your homework. Really look at this. Don't simply say, well, I'm going to vote for Gary Johnson because I can't vote for these two. Well, look who Johnson is. Look what libertarianism is, which no one has convinced me yet that libertarianism is the way to go. I know that it's got strong appeal. I know that there are those who are saying and actually claiming that label of libertarian, but I don't get it. I really don't get it. And I can't see value. I definitely don't see any global solidarity. Subsidiarity, yes. They want that local control, and they want to maintain that and want to give it to you to some degree as well with families, and that's great. But what happens when you don't have foreign policy? What happens when you have no social safety net? That's what you got. That's really what you got with libertarianism. So take a close look. Don't just protest vote. Look elsewhere for those who really stand for what you believe in. Try to find that. So we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.